and people are tuning in and sounding off. Call in now. 715-845-2155. WSAU Feedback on AM 550, FM 99.9. WSAU.
Welcome to Feedback. 6-7 minutes now after 8 a.m. And as we've talked about before, the state of Wisconsin is being held as an example to the rest of the United States. Specifically, one of the things that we're talking about.
Good
grief. Specifically, one of the things that we're talking about is the budget that Governor Walker has put forth. And a lot of conservatives are saying, hey, look, see, we can have a successful budget. But it's not just the governor. There's a lot of people in Washington working hard to make our state successful at the same time. And one of those is our very esteemed Mr. Senator Ron Johnson. Good morning, sir. How are you? And thanks for coming by the show and being a part of it.
Real good, Seth. How about yourself?
So far, it's really well. I'm thawing out, which is a nice alternative from the way it's been. We are looking at some really interesting challenges to our state, and we are looking at some things that are making our state stand out as an example. I guess just a blanket question to get things started. How's it going in Washington for you and for others? What's kind of the attitude toward us there in D.C.?
Well, first of all, D.C. is a mess. It's been a mess for quite some time. So, you know, we've got severe challenges, and you're comparing or you're relating federal government to Wisconsin. I think one of the most important things that Governor Walker did when he first took office is a pretty simple statement. He said, Wisconsin is open for business again. In other words, he told the world, he told the business community that we are going to be welcoming. We're going to celebrate success. We're going to incentivize success. That's not the attitude we have from this administration. This president demonizes success, whether it's doctors, whether it's business people. We're holding hearings here trying to demonize it. For example, last week, a good company like Caterpillar, because they're apparently only paying a 29% effective tax rate, and they're producing products here, and they're exporting them overseas, and we want to penalize them even more. We want to disincentivize them from doing that. So we first have to change the attitude, certainly with politicians, and I'm afraid with so many Americans, too, that have bought into that demagoguery where they want to demonize people, they want to scare, they want to scapegoat people, and what we need to do is we need to overall make America, Wisconsin, Wausau, we need to make wherever you live an attractive place for business investment, job creation, business expansion. That's how you have a strong middle class, is you have to provide the opportunities within the private sector for business growth and success. I mean, it doesn't come on the backs of government, because government is funded right now, today, on the backs of your children and grandchildren. So there's certain realities we have to face in this country, but the first and the greatest reality we all have to, unfortunately, relearn. Too many of us have to relearn. It's been freedom and a free market, competitive and cooperative system that has produced phenomenal economic opportunity over the centuries, quite honestly, here in America. And we're moving away from that. We're now looking to the government to solve our problems, and the government is utterly incapable of solving these problems.
It's an ideological challenge that we all have to face, is that you and I understand that the business, the small business especially, is the backbone not only of our own state, but of the nation as a whole, and it must be allowed to thrive. It must be encouraged. It must be incentivized. It must be fertilized, and it must be allowed to flourish in order for the economy to grow. The other side is that business, especially if you're successful in making a profit, the liberals and those that see government as the solution see that anybody who's making a profit is evil. And you're wrong, and you must have the profit that you've made removed from you by the government and redistributed to those that just don't have it so good. And how do you fight this ideological error? You can the plan of take from the people that have made the money and give it to those that don't have any, that's socialism. How do we fight that?
Well, you can only fight with information and trying to explain from people who actually know, and so many politicians have never operated in the free market system. They don't know how incredibly competitive it is and how that competition That's the only thing that restrains the growth in prices. It actually produces higher quality, higher levels of customer service. It's the free market competitive cooperative system that actually does that. It's not government. And so you first have to, unfortunately, try and remarket the concept of America, that it really is freedom. It's individuals that have a passion to build things. Those people need to be incentivized and celebrated, not demonized. So it's a huge challenge, but it's the truth, and that's one thing we have going for us is we do have decades to prove that this system actually works. And of course, what doesn't work, let's say, for example, a $16 trillion very well-intentioned, very compassionate war on poverty that has not exactly even reduced poverty. It's in many respects, I think you can prove, has exacerbated the problem. So what people need to do is look at the facts. They've got to tune out the demagoguery and start thinking for themselves. And let's, Seth, one of the things I point out, you've got such low public opinion approval ratings of, for example, Congress, 9-13%. Mm-hmm. I always point out that's still too high. But it's also the public's, I think, justifiable evaluation of the federal government. So here's the disconnect. People have a very low opinion of the federal government. They're correct. It's broken. It's inefficient. It's dysfunctional. Why do they want to keep looking to the government to solve the problems? Why are they sending politicians dedicated to growing this dysfunctional place? What they should be doing is realizing, yes, the federal government is dysfunctional. Our founders were right. We wanted to limit this thing. We wanted to keep it small. We wanted to make sure that individuals had the freedom, but with freedom comes personal responsibility, self-reliance, that the government should really be close to the governed in your local communities or at the state level, not the federal government. We've turned our constitutional framework on its head. We need to demand that power back to individuals and to our communities and to our state. That's where power, governmental power, really ought to reside.
What's the attitude that you feel of the Democrats as we're going into, the season to get ready for the midterms? A lot of political pundits are saying that Democrats are worried, Democrats are concerned that there's going to be a lot of seats lost and gained, of course, by the GOP and maybe even, harder, the Tea Party, if I can use that term. Conservatives, what are you seeing there that you've got boots on the ground? You're in the trench. Do you see that as being a concern of the Democrats, or are they just kind of oblivious?
No, I think the Democrats are highly concerned about losing the majority in the Senate, and they should be concerned. The health care law has been a disaster. I always knew it would be long term. Even I'm shocked at how utterly inept and what a disaster the website was. I mean, I guess, Seth, you can say that the government only had 3.5 years and $500 million to set up a website that I've heard some private website developers say they could have provided the website for about $10 million would have been far more secure than what the government spent $500 million on. So, no, they are highly concerned about that, and you can tell because some of the threatened Democrat senators are offering, now it's sad, but they're offering a copper plan. That's their proposal. Mm-hmm. The bronze plan isn't bad enough, so it's because of all the mandates, it's driving up the cost. Now they got to come up with a copper plan to get the rates of insurance a little more affordable, so they can maybe survive politically. Before long, they're going to be offering a lead plan. they're highly concerned about this, but. From my standpoint, I want to act responsibly. I want to, I've been pushing a bill, haven't got it fully written because I really need the House to pass this, but it's meant to repair the damage of the health care law. It's titled Preserving Freedom and Choice in Health Care. Its first component really would be to eliminate all those mandated coverages which are causing people to lose health care plans they like that they could afford, lose access to the doctors and treatments that have kept them alive. So preserve their freedom and choice and try and repair the damage. Basically, it's also those mandated coverages were driving up the cost of health care. So I think Republicans ought to act responsibly, do whatever we can to repair that damage and prevent future damage of this Obamacare law.
This is something that we were talking about yesterday, is that I was reading that a lot of people are saying, look, best case scenario, even if Republicans, conservatives come in and take in seats in the Senate and so forth, the best case scenario is that Obamacare is not going to be able to be effectively dismantled until 2017. And so there's going to be a need to do something to make it more affordable, more palatable up until then. And there was a proposal put forth and the president signed that raised out-of-pocket limitations on some of these plans so that people would have the ability to be allowed to do the high-deductible plans and incorporate health savings accounts with it. But the way it was being spun is that Republicans didn't want anybody to know that they voted for this because it could be used against them later. Said, oh, well, you know, you voted for an expansion of Obamacare when it's trying to make it more affordable for those that are being crushed by the premiums or the fact that they're just not going to be able to have any coverage at all. They're going to lose it entirely.
Yeah, well, it's certainly not the position I'm taking. And, you know, President Obama, quite honestly, is repealing or certainly delaying vast portions of this health care law because even he's recognizing how damaging it is, not only to real Americans, but that translates to damaging politically. So he delays things past the 2014 election. He realizes what a disaster this is. He's actually delaying things past the 2016 election as well. So to me, that is preventing Obamacare from taking firm and permanent root, which I think is, you know, that's kind of the direction we need to go. And I think we do need to act responsibly and try and help real Americans that are really suffering under this law. But I think if we look at this in terms of doing what is right, I think it's also going to be correct politically as well. So, again, that's why I'm really trying to push this bill, preserving freedom and choice in healthcare. Let's preserve what we've got in the healthcare system. Let's keep Obamacare from taking firm and permanent root. Let's, you know, fix whatever we can, you know, repair that damage. And then when we, you know, hopefully now we get majority in the Senate, but we also get a president that's serious about fixing these problems in 2017, we can really work toward the really free market types of reforms that actually would restrain costs long-term and improve quality and customer service. That's what we want for a healthcare system.
I know that you have a limited amount of time that you can spend with us, and I don't mean to bombard you with so much stuff, but it's a pleasure to be able to talk to you, and I want to get as much in as we can. What's the status on our fight of Common Core? There's a lot of people here in Wisconsin that just don't want it. There are states that are having a very effective fights, and they're getting it repealed. They're getting it tossed out. Where are we at with Common Core?
Well, first of all, the good news about Common Core is it's not a dictate by the federal government, so the states and local communities can decide. So, you know, I agree. I've seen a presentation, Leah Vukmir. I attended one of her outstate sessions on Common Core, and you know, it is amazing the types of things that are in that. And so the good news is if you're a local community, get involved. If you don't like Common Core, make sure it doesn't get instituted in your school district. You know, get involved, make sure it doesn't get instituted as state policy through the Department of Public Instruction. So this is a situation where federalism actually can work. It is working in certain states. So if we want to avoid that in Wisconsin, or if you want to avoid in this community, get involved. Make sure that this doesn't, you know, become basically the law of our state or the law of your community.
Senator Johnson, thank you for calling us, and thanks for being a part of the show. Anytime that you're in the area, we'd love to have you in the studio live. I'll even pour you a cup of really bad coffee from our studio coffee maker. How about that?
Oh, I like all kinds of coffee, so there's no such thing as a bad cup. But happy to do it. We'll get that arranged, Seth.
Wow, you are a politician. All right, thank you, Senator. I appreciate that. That's a great answer to bad coffee. Senator, thank you so much. It's an honor to talk to you. Have a great rest of your day.
We'll see you. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, we're going to take a first break. When we come back, we'll open up the phone line, 715-845-2155. Don't go anywhere.
I felt really compelled to call on my way into work.
The news you need, the issues you're passionate about.
And what's wrong with that?
AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.